great country Q94. It's Coffee with Kyle, the extended version from Dunkin' Donuts here in Prairie du Chien. We're talking with Prairie du Chien Police Chief Kyle Tinor. We talked on air on Saturday about school shootings.
Yes.
Primarily school resource officer.
Yeah.
Currently, Prairie du Chien doesn't have one. I'm not sure about all school districts in the area, but my mom is a teacher. She just retired.
Congratulations, by the way.
I know. She's pretty excited. But she talks about having no idea what some of these kids are going through at home. Or she will notice a kid acting out and think, well, that, you know, that's weird behavior for that kid. Something must be going on at home. And then teachers find out about it 2 or 3 weeks later and go, oh, well, that makes sense why that kid was happening. And one of the things you brought up on air is that obviously officers sometimes have information that a school district doesn't have. So if something happened, you know, there was a domestic violence, even, you know, just dad got pulled over on the way to school.
Yeah.
And for speeding, but, you know, that messed up the kid's morning. Now the kid's late for school. He thinks dad's in big trouble. All that officer has to say is, hey, he got pulled over for speeding this morning. He's probably a little worked up. Letting the teacher know that makes a world of difference for that teacher.
Keeps things in perspective.
Oh, he's not being a bad kid today, or, you know, he's acting out for something that happened. I can approach teaching this child differently.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I talked on air about missed opportunities, and you know, that you talked about those just in the last, you know, 20 seconds. But I think there's a missed opportunity from a communication standpoint with the district and the district to us, and you know, working through those problems and trying to figure out solutions to both of our problems, the problems that the police department faces and the problems that the district faces. We're missing that opportunity. And again, I want to put those connections together. And you know, I've heard all kinds of different suggestions over the last week, and I'm not opposed to any of those things. But it has to make sense, both logistically, you know, relationship wise, financial wise, and all of those things have to make sense to both parties. And we just got to make it happen. And you know, I think, you know, expanding on the missed opportunities, if we go back to the school shootings, I think the last statistic that I heard, there was like 27 so far in 2021, in the last year.
2022.
Yeah. The last 365 days,
okay,
basically.
Okay.
So kind of a running total. There's a lot of statistics that we miss about school shootings, and one of the biggest ones is 4 out of 5 active threats in schools reveal that information or their intent prior to them carrying it out. And so you ask yourself, who are they revealing this to, and why aren't we knowing about this in advance?
How did we not catch it? How did we not see it?
Yes, and I think that, again, that's a missed opportunity for law enforcement to collaborate with the school district, and we do what's called a threat assessment. And so what happens a few times a year is a student will display aggressive natures or make comments, or the school will find search history on computers that are controlled by the school that raises alarms. And so they call our staff, and we do, again, what's called a threat assessment. Lieutenant Cox is trained in this. Lieutenant Cliff is trained in this as well. They're facilitators of these threat assessments. A lot of times in the course of these threat assessments, we learn information that would have been very important to know well in advance, that somebody at the table of this threat assessment knew, that either didn't share, didn't feel like it was important to share, or just kind of dismiss this information as just they're just saying that, right? And so, again, it's that missed opportunity of that relationship, that trust building, that interaction on a more regular basis that I think we're missing. There's also very specific patterns of active threat folks. The U.S. Secret Service has studied this for a number of years. You know, there's ideation, there's search histories. They become obsessive with folks who are we all know the names that were previous active shooters or active threat people. They also tend to probe their targets, meaning they pre-op that target, where they see where the weak points are on that target. And we have experienced that in instances where we have done threat analysis, where we've said, okay, well, yeah, we saw little Johnny in the hallway and he wasn't supposed to be there at that point in time. Why is he there? And that might have been a probing technique to see how long can I hang out here before somebody pays attention to what I'm doing here. And so, you know, those are instances that we want to take into account. Another very common indicator of somebody who that's capable of this type of violence is they do small acts of violence, meaning they take some type of act of violence towards a family pet or a neighborhood pet, or, you know, just frogs and snakes and bunnies in the neighborhood or in the yard. And people just dismiss that as, oh, well, it's just, you know, little Johnny. Well, what they're doing is they're testing their capability of killing something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is stuff that's studied. There's a tons of research on this. This is not stuff I'm making up. This is stuff that has been trained to me and been, you know, published. Mm-hmm. So those are things, again, that through a threat assessment, we can pick up on and say, maybe there is a concern here. Maybe we do need to have a little bit more of a conversation with this person. And if nothing else, we're all aware of it. And we all can pay more attention.
And I think, there's so many arguments that you could have and we could discuss it. But, you know, you and I are in our mid to late 30s. We were in high school at the same time. The only time there's a police officer or any type of officer was the random time that they would bring in the drug dogs, you know, like once a year to search the lockers at the high school. I don't think that the doors were locked at our high school.
Definitely not mine.
I don't remember. I mean, there was, like I said, there a Columbine had happened when we were in high school.
Yep. I can remember sitting in biology class and Mr. Lenzendorf's biology class when Columbine happened.
Yeah, I think I was in, it would have been 98, right? I think it was.
Right around there. Yep.
Yeah, so I was in middle school. I remember it happening, and it was such a, at the time, to me, such a, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And we were talking off air before this. I think a lot of the point is being missed because a lot of these, you know, active shooter situations in schools, it's not an adult coming in. It's not yes, they're coming in from outside, but it's a kid enacting violence on other kids. And you know, take the guns and what out of that. Why have we gotten to a point where kids want to harm other kids?
Yeah. That's an important conversation.
that's a conversation. I'm confused as to why it's not happening. Yep. And as police officers, I mean, when I think about what you're dealing with, I think of, you know, the meth addicts and the drugs and drunk drivers and whatnot. But how often are you guys being brought in to deal with minors that are out of control or need, you know, there's mental health or violence issues with minors?
Sure. So I'll talk a broad range on what you just kind of talked about. But if you go back to the research, the vast majority of these active threat cases involve 16 to 25-year-old, and the vast majority of them are males.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, this isn't stuff I'm just pulling out of thin air. This is published data.
And let's be real. We say 25, you know, 20 to 25. Okay, yes, they're an adult.
Yeah.
But anybody over the age of 35, looking back when you were 20 to 25, you're going, I was still a kid at that point.
Well, I mean, the brain for men isn't fully developed until sometimes 35, sometimes 40,
yeah,
depending on who you ask, maybe 45 or 50.
But male or female.
Yeah, they're real. So here's the, in essence, what we get called oftentimes for is just that deviant behavior, not listening to mom or dad. Quite frankly, Lori, we've been called to homes where a 12-year-old refuses to shower. And mom and dad are trying to get them ready for school, and they just refuse to shower. And so they call law enforcement as kind of a last resort. And so we go there and we try to work through the problems. Now, a child who refuses to shower isn't typically, you know, on the track to be an active threat. But, you know, speaking of that, the deviance of
not listening
culture,
to mom and dad.
Just
to the point where mom and dad's last resort is to call law enforcement?
Yeah. And, you know, where we are oftentimes, we wear a lot of hats. One of those hats is mom and dad are at times. And we get that. We understand that. But what I'm seeing is a trend of risky behavior or riskier behavior, deviant behavior, meaning a willingness to create or violate more laws or social norms. But I'm also seeing a lack or a reduction in the respect or the sanctity of life in general. Whether that's, you know, from conception to death, we have become, I feel like,
become desensitized.
Yeah, we have been desensitized to death and the seriousness of harm to others.
And yes. I don't know who to blame for that.
Do you blame? I mean, there's a whole video game topic. Like, but I said, we talked off air about social media and how the good stories don't sell on social media.
No, it's
the death and the violence and the I talked about the TikTok challenges. You know, as we go around, there's TikTok challenges to smack an elderly person walking down the street, just a random elderly person. At what point have we gotten to this?
Like, how did we get here?
How did we get to the point? Or another TikTok challenge was to destroy your bathroom at your school. Like, knock the soap dispenser off and the towel dispenser.
Why?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, that doesn't lead to a school shooting, but it leads to a desensitization of
violence.
Respect. Like, just respect people around you and don't do this stuff.
Like, what? I mean, I'm trying to think back to when you and I were kids. If we would have walked up and slapped an elder on the street and our parents would have found out, I probably wouldn't be here today.
Well, Stephanie and Dan would not be happy, I can tell you that.
Randy and Louise would,
And I would be much more afraid of Stephanie and Dan than I would be of Officer X, Y, Z.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
That is the truth.
And I, again, there's a whole bunch of things that we could talk about. But as you know from the research, it's so easy to find content that desensitizes life. I mean, you can turn on any cable TV show. You can, whatever you want to find on the internet, you can find, and you can go down that wormhole.
Yeah. Well, one of my more impactful trainings I've ever been to was a training on the internet, and what it taught me was there are many people that sit around during their day and have thoughts that they know are wrong, and they check themselves out and they say, nope, I can't do that, it's wrong. What the internet allows us to do is Google that and find out that
somebody else had that thought.
There is a false sense of normalcy mm-hmm. in my thoughts. And so if you have a deviant thought, you can Google that and say, maybe I'm not as off as what I think I am. There's other people that think the same way. And that was astounding to me. When we would, the instructor would search deviant thoughts up on the Google search and see how normal that is portrayed on the internet. That was scary to me. And that's what normalizes a lot of this behavior.
And then whatever you do search, and say it's something as simple as, I want new sandals. It's summer. I've been shopping for sandals. Every social media site I go to, I now have ads and ads and ads and ads for sandals. Yep. If you think that doesn't happen with something like you're looking up, killing rabbits.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, you're going to have advertisements in your social media.
Or just a simple search of a gun manufacturer.
Yeah.
You're going to have advertisements for more gun manufacturers.
Oh, and, for sure.
You know, I just want to go, we talked about our parents a little bit, but I want to go back to kind of what we can do as a community to maybe not prevent these types of things, but have a better reaction to that is, one, first and foremost, is pay attention to what your kids are doing.
Oh, yes.
Pay attention to their search engines. Pay attention to their phones. You do have a right as a parent to go through those things. If your children are adamantly hiding that information, that would be a red flag for me. I have kids. I'm not talking from a single male perspective here that's never been through this. I have a 20-year-old. I have a 17-year-old. I have an 8-year-old. I know what kids are capable of. I know what they can do. My kids are not angels. They've made mistakes. I've made mistakes in my life. But you have to pay attention to those things and don't discount those things. You can be an annoying parent and still love your child and still be loved by your child. That can happen.
And you have to notice your child's behavior.
Definitely.
And as parents, the one thing that I have definitely noticed, and I don't talk about this a lot on the air, but the boyfriend has a 14-year-old daughter. She right. lives with us.
Yep.
You know, she's, I am with her every single day. I know when she's having a bad day. And sometimes it's like, okay, give her some space. She's having a bad day. She had a test. She's got a lot going on. And then there's sometimes where I'm like, I gotta go talk to her. What's wrong?
Yeah.
And there have even been times where she's come out and talked to us and said, hey, can you put your phones down? Or can you turn off the TV? I need to talk to
yeah.
you.
Yep. That's the time you turn your ears on.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm not saying I'm some great parent or anything, but there have been times where I will even look at the boyfriend and I'm like, when she comes out to talk to you, the first thing you should do is put your phone down.
Yeah.
Because if our 14-year-old wants to talk to us,
yeah.
she clearly needs to talk to us.
Yeah. I've seen a progression in my kids in particular where their bedroom becomes kind of like their cave.
Like you can't get them out of the bedroom.
Them out of there. So you have to seize that opportunity. When
exactly.
they are out,
when they come
yeah,
out
to talk.
You have to go, oh my gosh, my kid wants to talk to me.
Yeah.
And there are other times where, you know, you have to go into the bedroom and be like, hey, what's up? And check to make sure that, you know, there's not 4 days of, you know, Red Bull cans in their bedroom that you're going, you're going to have mice in here.
Yeah.
Come on, kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, as parents, we do have to take some of the responsibility and go, why are our kids struggling so much?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll go back to our calls for service for 12-year-olds that won't take a shower. That is a parental issue. That's not a law enforcement issue. They're not committing a crime. They're not, you know, they're not doing anything illegal. And so we do throw that ball back into the parents' court to say, this is a parental issue. Let's figure out resources that we have in the community. Maybe next week we'll talk more about the resources in our community. But we'll there are resources that you can go for parenting classes for, you know, counseling for these kids to make sure that they're making right choices and why they're making these choices. So there are resources out there beyond law enforcement. We're just an easy call. We're three numbers and you get us.
Well, yeah. And again, the hardest job on the planet is being a parent.
Oh, gosh.
It is the hardest job. And nobody has all of the answers.
Right.
And, you know, we only have one 14-year-old. You have three kids.
Yeah.
Have you ever parented all three of your kids the exact same way?
You can't.
No, you can't.
every person is different. Every child is different.
Exactly.
They respond differently to different stimuli. So.
And you know, we talk about, you know, a lot of times there's a trauma event that
yeah.
happens that causes a child's behavior to change.
Yep.
You know, three kids could see something happen. They could experience, you know, even just getting in trouble at school. Having a teacher talk to them. Out of three kids, each one of them will take that differently and react to it differently. And understanding, why did this kid react this way? Why did this kid react this way? You know, as a parent, well, oh, our oldest got in trouble all the time, but he's fine. Our second is a perfect student. He got, you know, one teacher one time told him not to do something and it sent him off the rails.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hard job. It's not easy.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I mentioned it's a full-time job. And when you add three kids into the mix
yeah.
and the balance of dance class and basketball practice and volleyball practice and running them to soccer.
Oh, and you have a job too.
You have a job as well. And you know, the balance of all that stuff.
Or you're a single parent.
Yeah. We get wrapped up into the daily lives and you know, then tragedies like, you know, Texas happened, and we ask ourselves, how
did we get here?
How does this happen? How do we get here?
But instead of angrily posting on Facebook and something has to change and politicians need to enact change and we're going to blame everything on politicians,
yeah.
have you looked inside your own home?
Yeah, you know, I don't like to get into the political world.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. There's a lot of changes that could transpire. I'm very frustrated with the government that we have, you know, currently and in the past. I've voted both sides of the aisle and will continue to vote that way. But There's no one finger to be pointed
in
one direction.
And,
first and foremost, you got to look in the mirror and see what you've done. I have to do that as a police chief to look in the mirror and see what I've done to make this community as safe as we possibly can. And if there's changes that need to be made, take that hard look and say, all right, we've got to change some things and figure out a better path. And I think our live segment on Saturday was a good discussion, and we'll continue those discussions. And there is no one singular answer to this problem.
No, there isn't.
There isn't. Abolishing the Second Amendment isn't going to get us safer communities.
Arming teachers is not going to.
No.
You can go. If you've been on social media in the last week, it has been insane.
Well, tons of experts.
Everybody is an expert on what needs to be done. Yeah. It's all, politicians need to do this. Politicians need to do this. Well. But what can you do? Instead of just ranting on Facebook, what can you do?
Well, I don't want to go down the Facebook hole.
I
try to stay away from that. But lots of experts on social media. I don't know that there's a single one answer to our difficulties or to active threats.
No.
We have to take a holistic approach to things and figure out a way that we can build better communities to then build better kids and build better school districts and, have a little more
Actually,
respect.
I do think there might be one thing that we could get rid of
What's that
might help. I think if we just got rid of the internet.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. This show would come to a screeching halt.
Right. But remember what we were talking about when we go back to 1998 when we were in high school.
Yeah.
Go back a few years before that and what didn't exist.
The internet. I mean, it was there. It just wasn't near as
prevalent. It wasn't what it was. It wasn't something that we...
We had to sit and wait for that dial-up to connect and hope that it connected for 15
right.
minutes. Yeah.
No, on the flip side, we wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the internet. And I'd like to think we have fun. So as much fun as talking about, active shooter situations is, we're pretty heavy today.
Yeah. Hopefully not all of our conversations are at the conclusion.
I hope we don't
have
to keep having
tragedy.
This conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Like I said, though, it feels like we're getting desensitized to it.
We definitely are, but I think there's things that we can do. I think that there's impacts that we can make, and it really starts with conversation.
Yes.
And having those difficult conversations, whether it's, with your police chief to say, what have you done to make our school district safer? Whether it's with our teachers or our school administrators or our mayors or city administrators or county administrators or whatever, our local politicians. One of my more difficult conversations I've had is I go to listening sessions with legislatures and I ask about the millions or billions of dollars that we've invested in other countries' police departments and militaries.
Why aren't we investing that here?
What big of a difference we could have made domestically if we kept those dollars closer. I mentioned in one of my other interviews about I got a $12,000 pot of money from Governor Evers. Although I appreciate that money, it was several millions of dollars that was dispersed to local law enforcement agencies. We all have an opinion on how that money could be better spent. And $12,000 in my world is a very short-term win on a couple purchases. Again, I think our dollars, our tax dollars, could be better spent making larger, longer-lasting impacts on public safety.
I know you see some of the money that gets sent overseas and you look and go, wow, what could we have done with that domestically? What could we have done? Mental health, even parental counseling, school counselors, why do we not have more mental health officers in schools that when a teacher sees, hey, little Susie is off today, her behavior is a little off, the school resource officer goes, there's a lot going on at home, and a mental health counselor comes in and says, hey, let me take her and we'll do this.
Yeah.
Now, again, every teacher listening in this area would probably go, wow, that would be really, really nice to have.
Yeah.
Instead of me trying to figure out why little Susie is fine one day and then completely acting out the next day. And every school administrator is going to tell you, I would love to have that, but I don't have funding for that. And education funding keeps getting cut.
Well, let's keep this in perspective. Let's remember what our schools are for. Our
to
schools
educate.
Are to educate our kids. And it's like percentages of policing. 95% of our resources are spent on probably 5 or 10% of our community. It's the same in the classroom.
Exactly. You
know, when a teacher has a difficult day with a student, a lot of their resources are spent trying to bring that one or two student up. And we could just, if we had more resources to focus on those, the teachers could be so much more focused on education of
exactly.
our students rather than putting out fires or calming nerves of folks. And yeah, it's just, I wish we had the answers in a 30-minute radio show.
Right?
We unfortunately don't.
I don't know. I think we could solve a lot of the world's problems, Kyle.
Well, again, I think it just starts with communication.
It does. And, you know, actually sitting down and talking with teachers. Because teachers, their job is to educate. And my sister's a teacher. My sister-in-law works in a school. My mom has been a teacher. She just retired. So they can tell you, yeah, I'm supposed to teach English. But I spend a good part of my day not teaching right. English.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Just like, you know, you were saying. So when you sit down with a teacher and say, what do you need? Yeah. And actually listen to what those teachers need, maybe we could get somewhere.
Maybe.
Maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation about...
Well, it's the need for the conversation and not conversation on social media. If we want to go back to the social media world, again, people are bantering on Facebook about all sorts of different topics. But those people very rarely come to the table and have a difficult face-to-face conversation. And so I really have zero time for those folks.
No.
In and let's sit down and we'll talk about it. I have been in the district administrator's office and had these difficult conversations. We've talked about these things on several occasions. I've gone in front of the school board and talked about these things. We need to continue those conversations and figure out a way that we can all be mutually beneficial from these conversations rather than getting on a keyboard and pounding out words that you're not willing to put any effort behind other than stressing your fingers out.
Or pointing the blame at somebody who you're never actually going to, you know, the easiest thing to blame is politicians.
Yeah, definitely.
Because your interactions with politicians is, your daily interaction is nil, yep. essentially. So it's easy to go, well, if politicians would do this, we wouldn't have this issue. Well,
yeah.
Okay, you can legislate a million different things.
Yeah.
But in the end of the day, again, look in the mirror.
Yeah, and we really have to focus on local. I mean, we really do. Problems, I've heard this many times, problems are not often solved in Washington, D.C.,
no.
problems are not often solved in Madison.
No.
We really have to start at a local level and figure out what fits Prairie du Chien and implement that here.
Exactly. Lots of discussion today.
That was good.
That was good. It's our extended version of Coffee with Kyle from Dunkin' Donuts here in Prairie du Chien.